And good morning. Good morning. Look at the time. It is 3 minutes past 8 o'clock in the morning. You are tuned to Positively Revolting. I'm Ani. And I got to just give a little update for today. My beloved co-host, Lynn, she's out exploring the universe and has not confined herself to the wilds of Studio 2 here at KABU Community Radio Station, your very own community radio station where you are, in fact, listening to Positively Revolting here in KBOO, Portland. Today, however, I do have Teresa Mitchell with me. Now, regular KABU listeners will know that Teresa is the host of the morning commentary show Press Watch, and Press Watch airs on this very station every Thursday morning at 9 o'clock. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for taking the time to come in this morning and share with us a little bit about what you have found about Fukushima. So here we are. It is the dawn of a new year. We are looking ahead. You know, it's like the new year is always this exciting time where people get full of these visions of stuff to do, the world ahead of us. Everything seems new and great. Well, maybe not great, but, you know, new. And we're moving forward and things. So in that, it seems like this perfect contrast to looking at the ever-unfolding global disaster of Fukushima. As we start out the Gregorian year of 2014, we realize that this disaster has been, in fact, unfolding for nearly 3 years now. Am I correct?
March 2011.
Right? That's nearly 3 years. And it's not cleaned up. It's not even close to cleaned up. It is ever unfolding. It is ever with us. There's a lot of information out there about Fukushima. Everything from the industry's downplaying of the events to cries that we're all going to die any minute now, like possibly, you know, before we even end this broadcast. And there's a lot of stuff to sort out. Now, you have been studying this disaster since its very start. So I wanted to have you on this morning, sort of cut through it. There's been sort of a new level of information, misinformation, disinformation, hysteria, and concern, you know, and I think concern is really important in this issue. It's a big one. It's serious. It's bad. But let's sort that information out. So if you could start us out this morning, Teresa, with just an overview, some updates that you're aware of happening in Fukushima now.
Well, Ani, the question is whether we're all going to turn into giant radioactive sapient ants.
Is that the question, then?
No.
Okay, damn. That question better.
Yeah. I seem to remember a movie had something to do with that, but
I wouldn't mind six legs, would you? Sorry, go ahead.
There's a fear-mongering industry on the net and on the radio, and I think that that's convenient for the nuclear denial industry, because people who fall for the fear-mongering industry, and it's easy to do because the nuclear industry is so full of lies, people who fall for that can be pointed at and laughed at. And so there's a great deal of red herrings out there, and most of it can be found on right-wing media. And when I, for example, just a couple days ago, I posted something on Facebook that I found someone who made a videotape of what appears to be a band of radioactive material that had washed ashore in California on a beach. And it's about a 5-7 minute long video of someone going out with his Geiger counter and finding 150 counts per minute along a strip on the beach, which would seem to be indicative of something washing up, most likely, I would say, from Fukushima. But, of course, there are other sources of radiation. It could be that it came from decommissioned nuclear submarine cores that were dumped off the continental shelf. Most people don't know about that in the 70s. But it had links to Rents.com, for example, which is a rabid right-wing site that includes David Duke and that sort of thing. So that kind of delegitimizes it right there. And I bring that up just to point out how difficult it is to sift through the information without the basic knowledge of what happened at Fukushima and basic knowledge of nuclear power and the associated physics. It's It's an industry, as I was saying, in March 2011, that whose first product is lies, and the poisonousness and the cost of nuclear power, and I mean not just the health cost, but the actual cost, has been so carefully and well hidden by the industry and by their collaborators that they can get away with murder, and they have. And so what I want to talk about is just how huge the problem is and how it remains mostly invisible, and that's the frustrating thing about it. There's no giant radioactive nest of ants coming this way, but there is there are sad stories out there. And so I have learned to trust a certain group of people who actually know the science and take nothing from the take no cue from the nuclear industry, and that would be Carl Grossman, Chris Busby, Helen Caldicott, Harvey Wasserman, and Arne Gunderson, and to some extent Michio Kaku, although he doesn't speak about it very much. These people you can turn to, and they will give you the debunking of the debunking, particularly Chris Busby, who has been doing some pretty intense statistical research. And he's the one that, well, all of these people are roundly hated by the nuclear industry, but Busby is the one that came up with the statistics that showed that people in the United States and on the West Coast of the United States have been losing their babies due to this stuff. And that came out a year or so ago, and to a great furor and furious attempts at debunking. But now it is followed up by further studies which show the method by which this is done, and the method is reflected by hypothyroidism, because that's the known and direct effect of radioactive iodine getting into the baby's forming bodies and replacing the iodine that was there. And I remember saying in 2011, there's going to be a lot of told you so in this. I'm sorry about that. It's kind of sad that it was time to take iodine pills, and that was hugely, that was also furiously rejected. I think because it would have frightened people so much. There was an article in Forbes, for example, saying how terribly expensive it would be to distribute iodine pills. You know, in the grand scale of things, of course, it is ridiculously cheap to distribute iodine pills. And the iodine pills that were available were gigantic doses that were created for countering nuclear war. So maybe they wouldn't have been quite appropriate. But I was saying that people should take kelp before it got contaminated so that they can get iodine that way. And that's what I did. After the explosions of the nuclear plants, I bought duct tape and sealed my windows and would not go out in the rain. And knowing what I know now, I'm glad that I did, because it really is that bad. It's not that bad for me. I was in my 50s when the things blew up, and so I wasn't forming my thyroids and didn't have to worry about that. But babies have been affected in Japan and in the U.S. by hypothyroidism, and the statistics speak for themselves. That's something that can't be hidden once you've looked at it, but it is pretty well hidden from the press, and that's just one tiny example.
Can we go back and just unpack for a minute when you say, you know, let's look at the infant mortality that you're talking about right now. Can you give us a little more detail on that when you just say people have lost their babies? That's just sort of colloquial. And I want more. Like, what kind of infant mortality are we looking at on West Coast?
It's a small percent, but some dozens of babies have been lost.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that was no small thing for the people who lost the babies, but this situation is just getting worse. It will continue to get worse because there's no way to contain it. There's nice-looking buildings that have been put up around the wrecked shells of the reactors, but they're hiding these radioactive hulks that can't be approached. We don't know exactly what's happening in them because they're so radioactive that you can't go inside. And as a matter of fact, they're so radioactive in parts of them that there are dead robots inside them that were destroyed by radiation. That's how intense it is. And they will continue to wash out their radioactivity to sea, and the radioactivity will continue and I believe it is just first starting to arrive here. There's a couple of points in particular that the debunkers like to hide. One of them is the idea that the ocean is so huge that it will dilute the radioactivity as it goes around the world. And
dilution is the solution. I've always heard it.
Dilution is the solution, and that's very largely true, except that it is not specifically true, because dilution is never perfect. There's no one out there with a blender making sure that pockets of radiation don't come in and affect any given person. The famous example of that would be Chernobyl, I think. Chernobyl's clouds passed over Europe and left some radioactivity there, was found in milk, but it especially hit a town in Finland, whose name escapes me right now. It just really zapped a town in Finland, because that was aerial dispersion. And the ocean is different, of course, but as I was saying with the band of radiation that was found in California this week, the dilution, of course, is imperfect. The other thing, and this is more significant, is bioaccumulation, and that implies the internal dose, and that's the big thing. Living beings accumulate these heavy metals, the reason being that heavy metals imitate metals that the body actually needs in trace amounts. That's the case with the iodine. Strontium is attracted to bone, and if I remember correctly, replaces calcium. It's either calcium or magnesium, I can't remember which. The body takes it in mistakenly, if I may anthropomorphize. And cesium gets into the heart in the same way. It's replacing a mineral that the heart actually needs. And so I think maybe, again, it is a form of calcium. So these things accumulate in tuna and other living things. And when those things are consumed, as they go up the food chain, the concentration gets higher. And there are other related dynamics, but bioaccumulation is the big reason why we can't just blow off this and say, oh, the dose is too low. That's simply not true in a particular case, and it is demonstrably not true with the statistics that are now coming out. The way the nuclear industry has dealt with the statistics is simply to deny them. For example, when the Soviet Academy of Sciences did work, come to think of it, with Busby to determine the statistical impact of Chernobyl, they came up with something on the order of 1 million deaths, and that means 1 million people who died sooner than they would otherwise have due to the radiation that was spread by Chernobyl. Well, this number is scoffed at, and you can find the press when that came out was practically shouting that only a few dozen people had died, which is absolutely absurd. But that is the technique. That's what continues when you try to look at nuclear power, and that's why people are confused. We're confused because a very powerful, very experienced and professional industry has been trying to confuse us.
All right, I wanted to go ahead and invite listeners to join us this morning. You are welcome to join us with your questions, your comments. Your calls are taken here in the studio at 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. Of course, we also encourage you to like the Positively Revolting fan page on Facebook, and you can follow along at home all week as we try to stay in touch, sharing articles and thoughts and such with you and you with each other. It's the joys of social networking. Please do give us a call, 503-231-8187, just like Miriam did. Good morning, Miriam. You're on the air.
Hey, I wanted to thank you guys for keeping this subject up. I'm not sure if folks have heard about No Nukes Northwest or Radcast.
But, I'm very glad that you called this morning. I was going to mention those resources later, but you can go ahead and do it your very own self.
Well, thanks. We have a project going on now at Radcast where we collect from citizens who have Geiger counters your readings from your house, from the rain, from anything you feel like testing, and we can help you to learn how to use your Geiger counters. and we post all of these readings on a map that should be up next week on radcast.org. I'm not calling, though, to just publicize the map. I'm really calling to thank you for talking about this. I just got an email this morning, and the person who wrote in was checking out the radcast.org site, and he said, you know, I think that if you post your posts in a more professional manner, it might come across as something that people understand better. And my whole concept with doing Radcast is this is for the people. People don't understand radiation. They want to understand radiation. And we are all, you included, KBOO, is here to help people to understand these things that have only come across in such a scientific way that none of us have a grasp on what it is we're being told. So your show, and I feel really strongly about this, your show and your commitment to putting out the information so that people understand it, and Radcast's desire to put information out so people understand this, is so key at this point, not having the same jargon that makes it, you know, the nuclear power corporations, because that's what they are, mm-hmm. talking to us, telling us how everything is fine. We need people to bring this down to our level. And I really appreciate the conversation that's going on this morning on KBOO.
Thank you so much for your call.
Thanks,
and for all of your work, Miriam.
I think it's a great example of how community radio can work, well, in that particular way, and how valuable community radio is and how valuable people's organizations generally are. I was just talking yesterday on my show about how just counting the number of protests that can be found in the media, we're approaching a different era in popular consciousness. So I'm encouraged. And I'm really glad for what you're doing.
Thank you.
And for people that want to really work on this issue in coalition with others, how can they, in fact, be in touch with the work of No Nukes Northwest and with Radcast?
The easiest way to get to us at this point is to email info@radcast.org. It's RADCAST.org, or go to radcast.org itself. And we don't have a whole lot up there just yet. We're working on the back end. And as I said, the maps should be up next week with citizen readings. And people, if you are interested in a subject, let's say clusters of cancers in areas where there are nuclear power plants, let's say in Washington, eastern Washington at the Columbia Generating Station, mm-hmm. people in Tri-Cities, if you're interested in that kind of thing and you want to see a map of clusters, this is just an example, you can do the research and create a spreadsheet. You give it to me. We review it, and then we create a map for you. That goes for any subject dealing with radiation, and that's what I mean, that we're here for people to gain an understanding in what we want to understand from all of this. You know, what is how do we break down the vocabulary?
What's a millisievert? Why is it
exactly important?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what is a count per minute? Counts per minute. And what right now across the United States? Right now, yesterday, the day before, and today, we're seeing a lot of fallout in the snow that is coming down across the U.S., and it's coming down. This is what I look at every day, multiple times a day, and I would love for people to understand what it is that I see, and that's what the maps will help you to understand, because the government isn't telling us anything about this. And I do want to say, too, to not be an alarmist, that the levels that are coming down aren't extremely high. But as you guys have already said on the show, it doesn't matter. Having radiation that's man-made radiation isn't good for you.
And there is the bioaccumulation aspect. So even
exactly. A
little now, it adds up.
Yeah, and another thing to bring up is internal dust. When it's in the water, then you're talking about it's going to be internal dust. It's not like the granite in Grand Central Station, which is radioactive. You get an external dose from that, but you don't lick the granite, you know, until you've ingested some of it. But you're going to get some of that water in you, and that's why it's dangerous.
Right, and once it's in you, it doesn't ever go out of you. It just builds up, and that's the bioaccumulation mm-hmm. that you were just talking about, just so people understand that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get rid of radiation that's within you.
Oh, I want to counter you just a little bit on that. There is some information that there are things that you can do to get rid of some of it.
I did just read about iodine cleansing.
Iodine cleansing, there's several things. The thing I've been emphasizing the most is vitamin C, because there's definitely some statistics that nuclear workers who take large doses of vitamin C live longer and are healthier. And the mechanism was explained by Linus Pauling some years ago, and every time I bring him up, I have to debunk the debunkers on Linus Pauling, which I'll get around to in a minute. But if you take enough of it, it will remove heavy metals, and that would include uranium, plutonium.
But it's whopping doses, and this is, again, still under
research. Yeah, it's something
research.
You have to build up, too.
Anyway.
I'll get off the line so other people can call in. And the last thing that I would like people to know, and you're touching on that now, is that if we help our immune systems ahead of time, and now would definitely be ahead of time, we're actually over that line, you can build your immune system up so that you are less susceptible depending on the amount of dose that's coming your way. And I strongly suggest that. And we do have some post-op with really good supplements and nutrition sources to know where all of those things are coming from. But I'm going to get off the air so others can call in.
Miriam, thank you so much again for your call and
indeed.
Your work in this area.
Okay.
Take
Bye.
Care. And it is 25 past 8 in the morning, and you are listening to Positively Revolting on KBOO, your very own community radio station here in the Northwest and around the world at KBOO.FM. It is a call-in show. Your calls are welcome at 503-231-8187. I'm Ani. My guest this morning is Teresa Mitchell. She is most commonly heard on Thursday mornings here on KBOO Community Radio, where she is a commentator and host of Press Watch, a weekly, what do you call that thing? Weekly
counter-propaganda
program that is airing at 9 o'clock every Thursday morning and has been for quite some time
now.
Yeah,
this may be most specifically true when it comes to war and the nuclear industry, because they're nothing but propaganda.
It's so true. Well, next up we have Brian on the line. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, you guys.
Good morning.
And always good to hear Teresa, you know. Twice a week is great. So, listen, I wouldn't have believed this had I not heard it on NPR, but, you know, I mean, I just, you know, if Fox said it, I wouldn't believe it. But basically, what really concerns me, just to an unbelievable extent, is that the people in charge of cleaning up are the organized crime aspect of Japan, and they have the trash concession, I guess, over there.
That reflects the desperation
and
that they've taken
hiring,
the Yakuza
now,
to do it.
They are hiring and underpaying or not paying homeless people. And, I mean, you know, I would have just thought, well, it was a rumor. But you know, it was very factual. This guy was saying, "Oh yeah, you know, they're hiring homeless people off the street to go out there and clean, and then not paying them or overcharge, you know, doing the charging them for rent and food and everything else, and so they end up with no pay." The level of responsibility for this is just, I mean, it would almost lead one to believe that they just don't care what happens as 850,000 gallons a day of dirty water goes outside that plant into the ocean. That's what I understand.
Brian, I'm really glad that you brought up this point. It's another part of the story I wanted to talk about a little bit today. I'm not sure what Teresa has to say about it, but I know I personally am horrified about the fact that, in fact, the Yakuza apparently have been brought in by TEPCO, the company that owns Fukushima, to hire cleanup workers. And they are, in fact, taking homeless men and paying them possibly up to $60 a day to do this most dangerous work. I've had a couple of listeners actually point out articles about this over the last week. I'm horrified. I mean, true enough, we need cleanup workers. I'm not sure humans, really. I sure don't mean animals. Teresa mentioned that even robots have failed under these conditions. But I'm thinking more robotically than not. It is not fit work for people, right? But
right.
somebody needs to be doing it. I don't know what the solution is there.
Well, could I ask a rhetorical, speculative question?
Please do.
Okay, if we look at, if we just ground ourselves in Naomi Klein's book and look at this, is this a test case? Is this a little test tube of, hey, how can we use the homeless people in America? And as we're creating this subculture of homeless people.
Are you talking about the shock doctrine?
Yeah, exactly. Talking about the shock doctrine. As America is creating actively, you know, this subculture of prison-based labor and homeless labor, you know, the cheapest source of labor they can possibly find. What are they going to do with all the homeless people now? I mean, now they got this great idea of having them clean up dangerous nuclear situations. Is this just something we're going to apply here? And that's a rhetorical question.
That is
well,
a rhetorical
I don't
question,
see why not, because this reflects historical actions. This reminds me of the movie The Battle of Chernobyl, which you can see for free on internet collections of films. I forget the name exactly. If you look it up on a search engine, you'll find Battle of Chernobyl available free. And in that film is revealed that Gorbachev, who was in power at the time, realized that the robots that they had and that they were creating were going to break down under the intense radiation. And so that in order to bury the Chernobyl reactor, the only choice that they actually had to get it done was to activate a vast army of people, actually the army, and other people as well, if I remember correctly. And they set up a system in which they dug a tunnel to the site to reduce the radiation as people were approaching. And they set up this system in which people rushed through a set of barriers through a tunnel underground. This is just incredible. One after the other, and they would spend something on the order of 17 to 25 seconds, if I remember correctly, a matter of seconds in any event, throwing pieces of super radioactive material off the roof of the reactor so that it could be taken out of the way so that the sarcophagus could be built over it. And so thousands and thousands and thousands of people did this. And once they did it once, that was it. Their radiation dose was up. Their ability to help was ended. Their bodies were trashed by an external, and I imagine internal dose of radiation. They went off, you know, knowing that their lives were likely shortened by this few seconds event. And Japan has been trying to avoid that. And, of course, in keeping with the habit of the nuclear industry to keep everything absolutely invisible, they've turned to the Yakuza and they've turned to people who don't matter in Japan, as in here, people who are homeless and have no firm address. And, you know, they're going to go in. They have gone in. And, you know, after seeing what happened at Chernobyl via the film, I can predict pretty easily that those people are now out, having had their maximum dose, or I'll bet more than their maximum dose, and then they're going to die. They may die of something that is known and statistically analyzed by leukemia, but it's just as likely that they will die of anything that the body is subject to when it is weakened, for example, tuberculosis, blood sepsis, pneumonia. They will die, and no one will notice because they're homeless.
Yeah, and so again, you know, humanity and the people, our team is sinking to a new moral low, basically.
And the invisibility goes on.
Exactly, and I'll let you guys go. It's very disturbing.
Thank you very much for your call, Brian. It also reminds me, I mean, just looking at works of fiction, there have been certainly many books with that sort of subplot. But when the first article was sent to me, it struck me as really super way too close to the bone with Margaret Atwood's Handmaid's Tale.
Funny you should say bone, but go on.
Well, you know. And Handmaid's Tale, a lot of us think about the Handmaid's Tale as a sort of cautionary tale about what happens when the hyper-patriarchy, radical Christian right sort of gain power and how women are subjugated. But as folks of who have read that book might recall, undesirables, criminals, women who resist the new ways, anyone who resists the new ways, are sent to clean up the toxic waste pits that make up most of the U.S. at that point. And it's considered, you know, fairly much short work because you just get sent out there and you clean until you die. And that's how they dealt with dissenters. It's eerie, and it rings way too close. And I just, you know, fiction.
We've been talking about how the lies affect you personally in your body, but there are some bigger lies that hang over us like the sword of Damocles. And one of those is the lie that, oh, it's only because of the tsunami that those nuclear power plants melted down. And this is not true. It was a massive earthquake. It hit with a force of a 7, at least on the shore. There was damage. The pipes of those plants were heavily damaged, and the power was cut off the minute the quake hit. And so even if their backup power had been working, if it hadn't been washed away by the tsunami, they would have had a few hours, maybe a day or so, to wash water, if they could get enough, through those broken pipes, and then the same thing would have happened. So the explosions might have been delayed by a couple of days, but the explosions would have happened anyway. And this is significant because nuclear power plants require outside power. They can't be suddenly shut down. It takes days to shut them down because there's so much. It takes like a month to shut them down because there's so much energy in the core, in the tons of uranium that are used for fission and for heat. And in the United States, we have dozens and dozens of nuclear power plants of similar design that would also be absolutely smashed by such a quake and would also blast their roofs off and would also become a Chernobyl. And I say Chernobyl instead of Fukushima because Fukushima is by the sea and there was plenty of water to pour over the top. We're in danger from our own nuclear reactors. They all need to be shut down. In Germany, they are shutting all of them down. In Japan, for a while, they had them all shut down. That is what should continue to happen. These nuclear power needs to be swiftly, immediately phased out because it is that dangerous. And if one Fukushima has this sort of effects around the planet, imagine 50, which could happen in the when a solar flare of sufficient force hits the United States and knocks out the power grid. Something to think about. The other thing I want to, and bringing it back to the personal and debunking the debunkers, you often hear that the dosage that has been measured in various areas that are affected by nuclear radiation from Fallujah to Chernobyl to Fukushima is too low to be blamed for the health effects that are observed. Now, that might make you turn your head just a minute there. You might want to say, well, wait a minute, why are we observing health effects? But that doesn't faze nuclear scientists who will tell you, oh, the dosage is too low and we can take this dosage into the lab and apply it to a rat and the rat will be just fine. And that's because that is such an artificial environment. And because, as I was saying before, we're talking about internal dosage and external dosage, and that's how things are obfuscated. But another thing that Chris Busby brings out, and again, Busby being one of the scientists that I actually trust, one of the facts that needs to be known is that uranium has such an affinity for human chromosomes that it is used to coat chromosomes for electron microscopy. And it reflects. That's because it is so heavy that it not only produces radiation, but it reflects it. And when it coats your chromosomes, it allows radiation to be reflected back into them. It worsens things, and it increases the amount of energy that's actually striking your chromosomes. So if you have some uranium, and if you have an alpha producer, say a bit of plutonium nearby, well, then you've got double danger. And so he has been doing the work on that. He says that uranium has the highest atomic number of any natural element, and its 92 electrons block the passage of the electron microscope beam. Quoting his article in Counterpunch, he says that's not all they do. They block gamma rays. The absorption of gamma radiation by any element is proportional to the fifth power of the atomic number Z. And I'll admit to you right now, I don't know where he's going with that. But skipping ahead a bit, he says the energy from the gamma rays absorbed by the uranium is therefore converted into fast photoelectrons, and these smash through the nearest tissue. And that is why you can have a dose. I'm departing from the text now. This is why you can have such a tiny dose of uranium and have such a tremendous effect. This is why Navajo miners suffer so much from radiation, even though scientists can jump up and down supporting the nuclear industry saying, oh, the dosage is too low, for you to say that any one lung cancer is caused by it, that's not true. We're talking about uranium, and so of course they got lung cancer from it.
So there's a lot to be said. We've got, just about 20 minutes left to say it in. You are listening to Positively Revolting. This is KBOO, your community radio station. I'm Ani. And this morning I'm here with Teresa Mitchell, host of Press Watch, usually heard on Thursday mornings here on KBOO. But I've asked her to come in and share with us some of her knowledge about the situation going on in Fukushima, the ever-unfolding nuclear disaster that has been with us for nearly 3 years, that isn't going away anytime soon. And we have callers on hold. I want to thank you for your patience this morning. It's a very important topic to get in on. And I want to talk to Harry. Good morning, Harry. You're on the air.
Greetings, one and all.
Hello. Hi there.
Greetings.
Oh, yeah. This does not look good at all. The problem we have in the Pacific Northwest is we're being sandwiched. We have to worry about Hanford to our east. Rain falls on that, and that radiation is coming toward us from the east. Now we have radiation coming to us from the west, Japan. So I assume that our radiation level should be more higher here than other places around the world.
Well, I have been, as regular listeners to my show know, I've been occasionally whipping out the Geiger counter, and radiation levels do seem to have been going up, as far as I can tell. And the woman who called in helped me with my faulty memory.
Miriam.
Here. Miriam, and her website can give you more information on that. So the answer is yes, and once again, that points to the invisible nature of radiation. We don't have, until just recently, and with Radcast and other efforts, until just recently, we did not have a method, and we still don't have a really extensive method that would track radiation as it comes in from whichever side. It's still not a very sophisticated system, and it's had to be set up by the people as opposed by the government, which you would think in a sane society would actually try to protect the people. So, yeah, there's that invisibility. There's that plausible deniability that allows the industry to continue on.
My next question was, about a month ago, the Japanese government passed a law, a gag order on the press and for doctors about information about the radiation leaks.
I missed the first part. Were you talking about Japan? Japan does have a gag order now.
Yes, we have one too. It's called the Patriot Act. That's why we're getting no information from our government. And you would think that our state universities would be conducting investigations or surveys and things like that, and they're not.
Okay. Thanks very much
for your
call, Harry.
Bye.
That's a great thing about having a call in on community radio is you can just keep adding to the information. I want to turn to the positive side, if that's okay with you, Ani, and talk about vitamin C and radiation damage. There's an article on orthomolecular.org, which you can find it on other sites, but they write, workers with severe radiation exposure at the Fukushima nuclear power plant had major reduction in cancer risk when supplemented with vitamin C and other antioxidative nutrients. 16 men aged between 32 and 59 years worked 5 to 6 weeks in a radiation-contaminated area collecting contaminated water, measuring radiation levels, operating heavy machinery, and removing debris. Blood samples were obtained to measure whole blood counts and blood chemistry, plasma levels of free DNA, and 47 cancer-related gene expressions. 4 workers who took intravenous vitamin C, 25,000 milligrams, that's the equivalent of 25 of those, big 1-gram pills, therapy before they went in, and continuously took antioxidative supplements during the working period had no significant change in both free DNA and overall cancer risk. 3 workers that did not have preventative intravenous vitamin C had an increase in calculated cancer risk. After 2 months of intervention with intravenous vitamin C and oral antioxidative nutritional supplements, free DNA returned to normal level and cancer risk score was significantly decreased. So there's a little clinical demonstration. and it confirms research done nearly 20 years ago showing that pretreatment with vitamin C by oral intake or injection increased sperm head survival after the injection of radioactive iodine-131 in mice, poor mice. But I bring that up because you can get vitamin C here. Little side note, most of the vitamin C, or maybe all of it, is made in China these days. Although it's not impossible to manufacture vitamin C, I guess it's just cheaper to make it there. But I take, from time to time, 7 grams of vitamin C, and I worked up to that level, and it doesn't cause me any ill effects. But you have to work up to taking, of course, most people aren't going to have access to intravenous vitamin C, but this is where I bring up Linus Pauling's research. Linus Pauling determined some pretty similar things about vitamin C, about removing poisonous heavy metals. And he used large doses, and he used a minimum of about 4.5 or 5 doses. He found a minimum effect at 4.5 grams, not doses. And his research has supposedly been debunked. But if you really look at it, his research was never debunked, because the subsequent research, and I would put that in quotation marks, that was done on that, used a lower dose and did not use levorotary vitamin C. So I say the higher doses, as shown by this the study that I just mentioned, are effective against radiation and against heavy metals poisoning, and should be looked at if you want to protect yourself against radiation.
So it's about 8:45 in the morning. It's Friday morning. You're listening to Positively Revolting on KBOO Community Radio, your very own community radio station. I'm Ani. My guest this morning is Teresa Mitchell. We're taking your calls at 503-231-8187. You are also encouraged to, find us, find our fan page on Facebook, where we are Positively Revolting. And like us, follow the conversation throughout the week, stay in touch. so many questions, so many things to talk about. Let's try this question out. Again, there's all manner of information out there, from the don't worry about it, we're taking care of it, things are under control, the Yakuza got it, to we're all going to die by the end of the day. How do you, Teresa, when you're doing your research, how do you separate the reliable information from the pseudoscience?
Well, in my case, I started looking into nuclear power when I first saw the movie that came out just before Three Mile Island, The China Syndrome. And I wanted to see if what was reflected in that movie was actually true. And so I started looking into it, and I found books that gave me basic information on how nuclear power worked and what the nuclear industry was like in terms of its deception. I mean, one reason it's so deceptive is that it came out of the secret war-ending program in World War II. It came out of the scientists who were associated with the Los Alamos nuclear power, nuclear bomb project, and Admiral Rickover, who was more loosely associated with that, wanted to create nuclear power subs, and then he wanted to create nuclear power stations so that some good could come out of this horrific weapon, which, as he knew, produced such radiation. However, if you look at what Rickover had to say towards the end of his life, he was terribly regretful of having introduced this, and he said that it all must be stopped or it would doom mankind.
All right. And let's go ahead and talk to Harvey. Good morning, Harvey. You're on the air.
Hi there, and thanks for the show. Very much appreciated. Because of the Fukushima nuclear disaster, I'd like to see a new consciousness about our food safety, and I'm calling for the Food and Drug Administration to start labeling our foods with a radioactive-free label like we have, like pesticide-free, gluten-free, and hopefully GMO-free. I'd like to see a radioactive free symbol on our foods. And I'd like to see them put Geiger counters in stores so that when you're shopping, you can personally test the food you're buying. And especially, things like pet food, because, they may dump a lot of this radioactive food and it might go into the pet food. So I think you have to really check for pet food. And radioactivity sterilizes all life. Arnie Gunderson said there is no safe limit. So that's it. So I'm calling for new labeling on our foods to tell us what's radioactive free. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Harvey.
Bye-bye.
Radiation in food, there's one of the things that nuclear power proponents will try to debunk by coming up with this idea called the banana equivalent dose. I bring this up because you may hear it. It's even abbreviated the BED, the banana equivalent dose, a concept occasionally used by nuclear power proponents to place and scale the dangers of radiation by comparing exposures to the radiation generated by a common banana. Many foods are naturally radioactive, and bananas are particularly so due to the radioactive potassium-40 they contain. The banana equivalent dose is the radiation exposure received by eating a single banana. By comparing the exposure from these events to a banana equivalent dose, they say a more intuitive assessment of the actual risk can sometimes be obtained. The average radiologic profile of bananas is 130 becquerels per 150 gram banana. The equivalent dose for 365 bananas, one per day for a year, is 3.6 millirems. Bananas are radioactive enough to regularly cause false alarms on radiation sensors and are used to detect possible illegal smuggling of nuclear power, nuclear material at U.S. ports. That's what they say. And but it's false because the kind of all kinds of radiation are not equal. The problem is that this system implies that all radioisotopes are created equal, that there's no difference between 520 picocuries of potassium-40 and a similar intake of, say, radioactive iodine. That simply isn't true. The physical characteristics of the radioactivity are different in what you might be consuming, say, in a piece of radioactive tuna. That was a Freudian slip. Tuna, not tuma. And the level of energy can be off by orders of magnitude. So there is no banana equivalent dose. And, of course, one does not eat 365 bananas at a time either. So you're not going to get a burst of radiation from a banana, even if it is possible to pile them all together and set off a radiation sensor. So you don't have to worry about those. No, it'd be the Pacific seafood that I'd be worrying about these days. And whenever there is a cloud, and there probably will be another cloud of substantial size from Fukushima as the situation worsens, as that corium approaches the water supply, then you have to watch out for radioactive iodine in water and milk.
All right. Let's go ahead and talk to Joe. Good morning, Joe. You're on the air.
Thank you for the show. The vitamin C thing with Linus Pauling, did he use ascorbic acid, or what kind of vitamin C did he use?
He used levorotary ascorbic acid, and he used doses greater than 4.5. That was his minimum dose in which he noticed effects, 4.5 grams. And so I take 7 grams, and I kind of recommend 7 grams, not that I know, but I'm just guessing because the study that I quoted had, 25 grams dose, and that was for people who were getting very high right there inside the Fukushima zone radiation. So for us getting much lower doses, I'm guessing 7 grams. What do you say?
Can you say the name of that very slowly and maybe spell it out for dummies like me, because I didn't quite catch what...
Levorotary?
Levorotary, yes. The construction of the molecule, this reflects physical characteristics that is revealed when you focus down using polarized light on a microscope on the molecule. It seems to rotate as you focus down to the right or to the left. And when the molecule is constructed to the left, levorotary, it is more easily absorbed by a human body. However, the dextrorotary stuff won't hurt you. It's just that you need more for the same effect, 8 times as much.
Okay. One other thing I learned about ascorbic acid, if you're going to take that form of vitamin C, is you want a buffered form of it, because the person who maybe takes too much of it the first few times will have some
it'll give you a tummy ache and loose stool. It certainly will, and that's why I had to build up from 2 grams. I think it takes about a month to get up to 7 grams.
The one form that I use is a powdered form, and it's can't think of the brand name of it right now, but it's mostly rose hips and acerola cherries, I guess. And it's not as it you can't get the you have to take a lot more of this in volume to get the equivalent of the ascorbic acid as far as milligrams of vitamin C, but it's it will, you can take as much as you want, and it won't mess up your flora and your large intestine where it causes the loose activity down there. But anyway, so this, it's either left rotating or right rotating vitamin C is basically what you're saying?
Yep.
So you want the left rotating.
Yeah, that's more effective, but it's hard to get, and I don't even bother, actually. I take pills pills of moderate cost that I get at the health food section of the grocery store, and I know that it's mixed levo and dextro rotary, and you'll see what I mean if you try to get some levo rotary ascorbic. It's mostly available, if you can get it at all, in powder form, used for cosmetics.
Okay. Hey, another thing, too, is maybe Dr. David Neiman on his Monday morning talk show called Health Watch at 11 a.m., maybe sometime in the near future he could maybe do a talk about Fukushima and its radioactive effects on people and what we can do about it, and maybe even have an hour-long special. How's that, Mr. Program or Mrs. Program Director?
I'm not the program director.
Yeah, but whoever's
and
listening out there who might be...
I think that would be David Neiman, actually. And, our program hosts here at KABU are responsible to come up with their own topics. It's an amazing thing. It's a rare thing in radio, I got to say, and I respect that. And I will happily drop a little suggestion into David's box to see if he might want to be able to focus on radiation and keeping our bodies as healthy as possible as we live in a compromised world.
By the way, I try and tell at least a half a dozen people per day about Fukushima, and about 99% of the time the people look at me dumbfounded. They're totally clueless. They have no idea how much radiation is coming from Fukushima.
Yeah.
So. And how dangerous a little bit is. I mean, it's that invisibility factor. But if you do the real science, and, you know, interestingly, to debunk the debunkers, all you need is more real science.
Yep. Thank you very, very much, Joe, for your call this morning.
Thank you, people. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I want to make sure that people have resources. This show is all about making sure people have good information and that we have public discourse. I mean, that's the purpose of Positively Revolting, is to encourage public discourse so, in fact, we can take positive actions to turn this stuff around. So, along those lines, I want to mention a group that was brought up early in the program, and that is No Nukes Northwest. You can find them online. And this is a group that is working on this issue at home and worldwide, really, but really focusing at home. And we heard earlier mentions of the Columbia Generating Station, otherwise known as a nuclear power plant, right? And that's in eastern Washington on the Columbia, you know, near Hanford, which has been leaking heavy metals and radioactive isotopes into the Columbia, since well before I was born. And let's look at our own backyard. Let's look at the radiation that we are generating in the Northwest. The work of No Nukes Northwest, it's a great group, and it's made up of citizens, well, just like you, listeners. So if you're interested in more information or in actively working on this topic, that is one group that is around that is doing good stuff. Also, it has been mentioned a couple of times, and we have posted a link to it, thanks to Eric, very quick with the posting of the links. Listener Eric has posted the link to radcast.org, to the Positively Revolting fan page on Facebook. That's radcast.org. Some very new site that our first caller actually started, that is tracking radiation levels called in by pretty much citizen radioactivists. Trackers.
Yeah.
I've got to figure out a word there. Anyway, and that is also a great source of information, radcast.org. There is also a blog that goes along with that, and that is radcasting.blogspot.com. There are those resources. We have just about 1 minute left. Teresa, do you have any final thoughts?
Well, I want to say that this is real and it is worthwhile to get a Geiger counter. I got one online. It works pretty well. It's very basic. Costs about $130. Got it from China. It gives me counts for minutes, and it gives me, I didn't realize this until this week, it gives me millisieverts. But I want to give Helen Caldicott the last word. She says, large areas of the world are being contaminated by a long-lived nuclear element secondary to catastrophic meltdowns. 40% of Europe from Chernobyl, much of Japan. A New York Academy of Sciences report from 2009 titled Chernobyl estimates that nearly a million have died from this catastrophe. In Japan, 10 million people reside in highly contaminated locations. This is very serious, and you need to take steps against it.
Teresa, I want to thank you very much for joining us this morning. I want to thank all you listeners for joining us this morning. And I want to encourage people to stay tuned to KBOO, your very own community radio station, all day long. Coming up next in just about 2 minutes is the APA Compass. It's the show that will start off the Friday morning radio zine here on KBOO. 9 to noon, public affairs and information coming your way. Also at noon, listen in for Music to Move You with Moving On. 1:30, The Song Circle, your guest host, DJ Sam, today. And, you know, so much more all day long here on KBOO, your community radio station. We'll see you next week when Lynn will be back with me. And once again, we are positively revolting together.
KBOO Community Radio and the North Portland Neighborhood Library is proud to sponsor the Jefferson High School 13th Annual Multicultural Film Festival. On January 14th, the documentary The House I Live In explores the risks that prohibition poses to freedom and the tragedy of addicts being treated as criminals. Meanwhile, the prisons of America are growing overcrowded with nonviolent criminals and illegal drugs are still being sold in schoolyards. This film is being shown on January 14th at the North Portland Neighborhood Library off of Killingsworth Street at 6 p.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO. This is KBOO Portland. The time is 9:01 a.m. Stay tuned for APA Compass.
Good morning and happy 2014. You're listening to APA Compass, the Pacific Northwest's only Asian Pacific American public affairs radio program. I'm Kushlani D'Souza, and today we're taking a look back at some of our favorite stories from 2013. You'll hear Sarika Mehta's story about filmmaker Vidyut Latte's documentary on the deaf and hard of hearing community in Mumbai. We'll also feature Sarika's conversation with historian Joe Ogden about Astoria's Punjabi community at the turn of the 20th century. Today's program also includes an excerpt of my March discussion about gendered violence and social movements in India with Smith College professor and activist Pinky Hota. Andrew Yeh tells the story of a Japanese-American veteran's Congressional Medal of Honor. And Ka Her interviews local activist Tui Tran about Asian Americans' political involvement. We'll end the show with a remembrance of Afifa Ahmed Shafi, a longtime friend and APA Compass founding member. First, let's listen to Luann Algoso's conversation with comedian activist Jenny Yang, who's made headlines recently for her viral hashtag NotYourAsianSidekick Twitter campaign. She talked to APA Compass in May about her disoriented comedy tour.
Oh my God, you guys, I'm so excited to be here! I hung out in Portland for a week, and I swear to God, I need to not feel the pressure of peers because I really want to get a tattoo. So this is what I decided. I want to get a tattoo. It's going to be two words. It's going to be all capitals. And it's going to say,